Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and today we're going al norte, Northern California it is, going to the Bay Area in our beat writer series with Cam Inman of the San Jose Mercury News and also the East Bay Times. And you can also hear him on 95.7 The Game. Cam's been covering the 49ers for many years, and I first heard him on one of the early episodes of the Compas on the Beat podcast. And so, you know, as I told him off air, he's a fellow compa. He's also a Cal Poly SLO alumnus, like my wife. So I wanted to tell you
great.
That. So I know you're good. I know you're good gente. So Cam, gracias for joining us, and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I want to jump right into it. You saw probably you were ground zero on the intrigue, not just in the Bay Area, but throughout the NFL when the 49ers traded up to get from 12 to 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, early on, all the talk was Mac Jones. So many insiders were saying it was going to be Mac Jones. And then later on, some of the Vegas started to get involved, and you started to see Trey Lance and mm-hmm. Justin Fields start to creep up there. For you, what was it like to cover that?
Yeah, well, I did like the fact that Kyle Shanahan came out early and said, yeah, we're drafting a quarterback, right? So he said, well, that eliminates a lot of the suspense, but little did we know it didn't at all. So, yeah, there were some early reports about Mac Jones, and that kind of, I didn't buy into it right away. I did with about 2 or 3 days leading into the draft. I finally went to Mac Jones. I was initially thinking Justin Fields because I knew they had a relationship, but I thought this guy played at a big time college. He's a dual threat. He's a big guy. They seem to mesh well. And then he just fell off the map. So I'd be curious to see how his career unfolds. I did a big series breaking down each quarterback. I talked to different, like an offensive coordinator. I talked to a defensive coach in Wade Phillips who'd gone against the Niner system. I talked to a quarterback, draft analyst. I had like 6 different criteria, right? And I will say when it came to Trey Lance, there was never anything bad said about him specifically other than he didn't have a big sample size, which isn't his fault. And or that he was at, you know, an FCS school at North Dakota State, and mm-hmm. as a Cal Poly guy, as a smaller school guy, they don't knock us, right? Jimmy Garoppolo made a pretty good fortune out of going out of Eastern Illinois. So, but then Mac Jones, I have never seen a polarizing prospect like him in 20-something years. I mean, everybody was against Mac Jones here in the Bay Area. It was crazy because, I mean, you can only go back maybe 10 years because we didn't really have social media before then where people could voice their frustrations other than at the Keysar pub or the Candlestick tailgating lot. So now everybody has a voice and everybody let their voice know they wanted no part of Mac Jones, to which to this day, Kyle still defends him, but it almost, you never know like how these coaches actually really feel. They put on a public face as we've learned. So, mm-hmm. It was fascinating to watch, and, whether they made the right choice or not that's what's going to ultimately decide this. I don't think anybody really is going to remember too much about the pre-draft mystery as much as they're going to remember whether this pick succeeds or utterly fails, because so much is on the line and they cannot miss out on this draft pick. And that's why everybody is so interested and invested in it. But I do like the way they have it set up where they're not rushing him in, that you're willing to pay Jimmy Garoppolo to stick around, and you didn't bring in some journeyman veteran like an Andy Dalton who's at the journeyman stage mm-hmm. of his career to support a rookie quarterback. I this team is ready to win now, and I think there's too much of a risk throwing a rookie in that's never really seen this level of competition right away. But I like how they've handled it, and I like how Jimmy and Trey are both approaching it. It seems like it's an amicable relationship, but honestly, we've only seen them on the field 3 hours together in the whole off season. So that's what happens when they cancel mini camp because they're so good and everybody's getting hurt.
And that's the thing. It was, you know, you had the 2 injuries on that happened during a series of plays, and I can imagine why, you know, Coach Shanahan wanted to, you know, kind of cut off OTAs at that point. But how surprised were you that mini camp got cut?
I was really surprised. I mean, I figured they would cut it back a day. I think there's more to this. Like maybe they made some kind of an agreement with the players saying, if we get strong attendance, I understand, like they put out the NFLPA statement before the offseason program began saying many of us will not come out of fear of COVID-19, which is also a negotiating tactic a lot of other teams were doing. So maybe that paid off into them burning off the mini camp, besides the fact that you have these injuries, fact that you've gotten a lot of action. But again, those practices that we saw, the OTAs were only 75 minutes. There is no hard contact allowed. Obviously, it's like they don't really do much. It's some kind of condition. It's this kind of way to get everybody in the right place and kind of build things together and go install plays. So I don't know what they necessarily would have gained with a 3-day mini camp anyhow, or even a 2-day. Or this is, for the most part, a veteran team. And the only newcomers that are going to need to get caught up to speed right away are Trey Sermon, who can't do any hitting anyhow as a running back. I mean, you can't judge running backs and linemen until the pads are on. And that's not going to happen until August. But if they felt that Trey Lance was picking up the offense and the verbiage and looked comfortable, then great. Then if that's the case, move on. See you back in late July.
So a lot of the intrigue when you get there in late July is going to be Jimmy G and Trey Lance. And you said that they work together very well, but you saw them for 3 hours together.
Yeah.
I mean, so much of the talk, and I think we've seen this kind of formula before. The veteran starts at least part of the season, if not the entire season. So, from the fantasy football community, can we expect there to be Jimmy G at the beginning of the season, maybe at least to the bye week? How do you see the offense going?
Yeah, I'd absolutely. That's what I'm expecting. I mean, unless Jimmy gets hurt in August, which is possible, I don't think that you bench a $25 million quarterback in week one. You would probably trade him at that point if some other team was desperate. So I think that's the case, but I mean, like fantasy football wise, when's the last time a 49er quarterback went in like the top level of a draft, right? I mean, probably go back to Jeff Garcia about 10 years ago.
Stevie Young won me a championship back in 1992.
Oh, so you're dating yourself. They didn't have don't lie. They didn't have fantasy football in 1992.
We kept it by hand.
Exactly. No, but it does have ramifications in terms of what wide receivers are you going to get Debo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk, because Ayuk's a guy that you could probably steal later in a round that could have a big, I mean, he had a really good rookie year and for a team that was really beat up. And a team that burned through three quarterbacks again. Mm-hmm. So I think like if you have a stable quarterback situation and then you also know that Brandon Ayuk has done he's done offseason work with Trey Lance. So I think that's a good little pro tip right there, that he might be somebody to really, go after there in a middle round to sneak through or something. And then running back, I mean, I think this is still very much a George Kittle's offense and a running game offense. So that's how I see the offense going. It's almost like the quarterback is supposed to be the marquee asset of any team. Except in a Kyle Shanahan offense where he's one of the guys. When you have all these running backs, you have very athletic linemen, you have George Kittle, you have wide receivers that are running in the backfield, catching a 1-foot pass and taking off 20 yards downfield. It's a fun offense to watch. I mean, at least it was the first couple of years. It seemed like last year they put in some of those jet sweep tosses where it's like, oh, that's kind of cute. But there wasn't as many inventive plays as there was in 2019. Remember against New Orleans where Shanahan's pulling everything out of the book to try to keep up with Drew Brees and the Saints, and it worked. And that was one of the best football games I've watched. That was the best first half I've ever watched because they were trading touchdowns back and forth. Probably the best second half I ever watched was the 49ers Saints trading blows in that playoff game about 9 years ago.
Oh, I remember. Oh, yes, I remember that. That was in Candlestick, right?
It was in Candlestick. Alex Smith scored like a tying touchdown. And then Drew Brees threw a touchdown. Who did he throw it to Jimmy Graham maybe? And then the Niners came back and won again. That was phenomenal. So that was good. I've seen too much 49er football. I mean, I've covered the team since 2000. And I grew up in the Bay Area. And I obviously, like, Joe Montana was winning their first Super Bowl when I was, in my formative years. And so, like, growing up in the Bay Area here, I'll admit it, very much a fair-weathered fan, and the Niners were winning a lot in those days. Raiders were doing all right, too. The A's were doing all right. Warriors were not so much. So it's like it's – yeah, I used to jump around all the time. I like sports. I like winners.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, being a lifelong Angelino, so I know there's the rivalry between the two cities. But when it came to the 49ers, I was just kind of like, you know, it just hit the cap. They're just good. And then they stayed good. You know, you were talking about Kittle. And I think one of the things, I mean, obviously from the fantasy community, everybody who invested a high pick in him last year was robbed of his greatness. But does he look all systems go and kind of – you mentioned it. He is the engine that drives this. So, I mean, we can, you know, if we get 17 games out of him, we could be looking at, you know, 8 to 10 targets a week on him. Don't you think?
I think so. I mean, there's two things about this. I mean, one, you bring up the durability aspect, and he's missed 10 games in the last 2 years, including 8 last year. And he takes great care of his body. I almost worry that he's bulked up, you know, to the level where he's strong and sturdy. Right. And I hope like those muscles he doesn't overdo it. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think he incorporates a lot of pliability and flexibility. His sister does yoga. So I don't worry about his physical condition as much as like bad luck. Right. Like whether he gets hit in the knee when he's, you know, by Buda Baker comes at his knees again or, but the other aspect about Kittle is no matter what he does as a receiver and yards after the catch, they need him in that running game. I mean, his blocking prowess is unmatched in the league, as a tight end. And he really is your sixth lineman out there. And it's a joy to watch sometimes. And, just because he's become a technician and a very smart player about it rather than, stealing the souls out of guys that he blocked to the ground. I mean, he is a wonderfully colorful player to talk to, and he's fun. He keeps it free spirited. He knows what he's saying is going to garner headlines, and it's good to have guys like that are authentic. Though, I mean, there's guys that have come through that locker room that put on this, you know, show, and I don't mind the show as long as they're authentic and having fun with it, rather than the cameras are off and they become jerks and just that's not George. It hasn't been. That's why I think everybody appreciates it, but he's mad at us that he hasn't won the, what we call the Gary Niver Good Guy Media Award yet. George is entering year 5, and I would say he's the prohibitive favorite right now. I mean, Trent Williams walked in his first year and he stole it. And none of us have ever met Trent Williams face to face yet because it was all on Zoom, but Trent was so forthcoming and talked about what it was like to be traded and what it was like to go through his cancer situation and you know, what Shanahan was like. And he wasn't selling himself. He just, the guy, when you get this long in the league where you've been in for 10 years and you can just be open and you know what not to say, but what people might want to know. And he was great to have. And so that's why Trent Williams won it last year. Although George was great too. It's just George missed half the year. So it's kind of like, I don't really think you can give it to a guy that's missed half the season unless it's too awkward if he's doing weekly press conferences and he's not playing. I mean, that's kind of, Sherman fell off the wayside too. Sherman went the year before, but he missed like 6 games last, 6, 7. Seemed like he missed all of them, to be honest. But but I will tell you, Richard Sherman, an Angelino.
Yes, Dominguez Hills High.
You know, was he Dominguez Hills High?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to cover games down in there. And anyhow, he was one of the greatest enemies in 49er history there. And then he comes and, oh my gosh, he is so smart and just really enjoyed learning the game of football from his perspective. I mean, I just love guys that will share that kind of knowledge, not with just reporters, but you see him do it with the younger players too. And when they keep harping on him as Uncle Sherman being old, I can't imagine that sits well with him, even though he'll, you know, bite his tongue and understand it. But the injuries kind of caught up to him last year. And I think a lot of people want to know, is he coming back because he's unsigned? And it just didn't seem like that was going to be the case last year. Like they were parting ways. And I think he would come back if, say, Jason Verrett got injured Maybe if one of the other cornerbacks, Mosley, if he got hurt, then I could see Sherman coming back definitely. But otherwise, they drafted two cornerbacks for the first time under Shanahan and Lynch. I think they want to get those guys going and get some youth in there. And that whole cornerback situation really revolves on how good of a defensive push they can get up front. And they should be getting that back with Nick Bosa.
Oh yeah, and we'll talk. I got a quick question on the defense later, but I wanted to ask about one other receiver before we jumped into running backs.
Jalen Hurd.
Well, first Deebo Samuel, and then I was going to ask about, and then I was going to ask if Jalen Hurd could be a sleeper. So obviously, I mean, how many games were Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle on the field together? Couldn't have been that many.
There weren't maybe that many. One or two. Maybe three max, because Deebo and Ayuk were only on the field together, I think five or six, but not even full games at that, I don't believe. So it really, that's something that we haven't tapped into yet. And I think that's going to be, if you put those together, I mean, but that's the problem. I mean, Deebo plays so darn physical and hard. Mm-hmm. That's what makes him who he is. And they can use him in a lot of different ways. So, yeah, I mean, at one point last year, I was like, well, Debo's their best offensive threat because he can run the ball and he can catch, and he's that attitude that I think every team needs a guy that just, you know, tough guy. And he exudes that more than like a lot of other wide receivers, obviously. Jalen Hurd is a guy that we've been talking about for 2 years that nobody knows a darn thing about because he had two touchdowns against the Cowboys in the exhibition opener. Hurd is back. Was gone for his rookie year, tears his ACL the second practice last year of camp, comes back now, and we haven't seen him yet in practice, but we did see him on the field for the first time in about a year. And I was looking through my binoculars because Shanahan has him practice about 700,000 miles away from the media and with a stream of players in front of us, so we can't see anything. Now, it's not just his fault. I mean, it's the way the COVID protocols are set up where they put us on a far field. And Jalen Hurd used to have dreadlocks and have this big bulky body, and he kind of ran stiffer. And maybe that was because of his back injury. But when we were able to watch him just for a day, hair's all cropped up. Like, he had less hair than I got right now, though I need to go to Cosmo's barbershop to get a big barbershop guy, by the way, when I go on there. And then, but he looked fit. And that's so all the optimism about him playing this year, there is reason for it. And it was not just a, oh, this guy's done with football thing. I think they could have a great steal with Jalen Hurd if he's healthy, because that adds another element to Shanahan's playbook where it's almost like he's so big, you can almost line up like a tight end opposite Kittle, or you can just line him up anywhere, let him go.
It almost feels like, you know, Kittle will definitely be the leader in targets, but
could be Ayuk.
You think it could be Ayuk?
Oh, yeah, could be Ayuk. Yeah, I think so, because I think I don't think they want to overuse Kittle too much. That's always a concern. So yeah, it's kind of balanced. I mean, then they'll also say like throw the ball to the running backs, but that's kind of like a last resort.
Well, let's talk about the running backs. Obviously the Jeff Wilson injury, the torn meniscus, before the OTAs, was a big blow. He had a couple of big games last year. Raheem Mostert had his moments. Obviously, that big closing kick in 2019 was huge. And then they drafted Trey Sermon in the third round. Does it really look like, you know, we know Shanahan likes to spread the wealth when it comes to the running backs. Does it look like those two are kind of the leader in the room?
I would think so. I think Mostert wants to be a superstar. And he's got the speed to do it. And he's shown he's got potential to do it. Very well-liked guy. It's just a matter of how healthy can he stay. He had a freak forearm injury when he was just kind of becoming the running back a few years ago. And then he has a knee injury that's kind of off and on and kept him out of the last OTAs that we saw. But I think he'll be the starter. And but then it's interesting because today the Pro Football Writers of America gave Bobby Turner and Rod Marinelli Lifetime Achievement Awards. And in that statement, it noted that Bobby Turner was the running backs coach for three of the nine best rookie rushing seasons, whether when he was in Washington, Denver, Atlanta, all this stuff. And I'm like, well, wait, you know, he's got another rookie he gets to work with this year. So I wouldn't put it past him necessarily, maybe if they love Trey Sermon, but I think they also like Raheem Mostert a lot. And you know, a year ago, Mostert was asking for a trade because he wanted a raise. And I don't think that sat well with anybody. Understood why he did it. And he's on a, you know, he's bounced around enough and he had a great breakthrough season, ran for franchise record in that NFC championship game. So it was the time to cash in. But then so he's going into his contract year. And so he's got a lot to prove still. Nobody's going to give him anything. And if Trey Sermon's pushing him, I think it can only help both of them. It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, and the three of the nine greatest rookie years. It's definitely a mental note that I'm going to keep in mind.
I got to try to remember who the three were. I know Alfred Morris was one, and I think one or two of the Bronco backs maybe too.
Clinton Portis could have been one.
Yeah, Clinton Portis was probably one, and then maybe the Broncos. I forget who it was. Mark Anderson. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because it wasn't Terrell Davis. He didn't take over the job until partway through the season. So
right,
you know, yeah. I'm gonna look that up. That's an amazing stat.
I'll look it up. What's your next question? I'll look it up right now.
So you talked about the offensive line a little bit. Oh, actually, yeah. No. I had one quick. Elijah Mitchell was a late round pick there. Could he be a guy kind of like a Swiss Army knife type of running back?
Yeah, well, so here's the thing with him. He's really fast. They were throwing a lot to him in, like, wheel routes and stuff in OTAs. He looked fine, looked very capable. So I think it comes down to, do you go with the young Elijah Mitchell, or do you, like, put him out on waivers where another team could grab him? Probably they wouldn't. Or do you go with the veteran in Wayne Gallman, the Giants' leading rusher last year? So, or do you keep both since Jeff Wilson Jr. is going to start the year on PUP? I mean, you could do that also. And I'm not sure what they're going to do. I'm going to probably do a 40 or a 53 man roster projection this week in the mercurynews.com. So you can see that. But so I'm not sure what they'll do, but I liked what I saw out of him. It's really hard to judge running backs when they're not hitting guys, right? You know? So.
No, exactly. Exactly. But one thing we do know is that Shanahan does like to, you know, use his running backs and use them. Use all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I don't know if you found that, but I can go into the next question.
It was Mike Anderson.
Mike Clinton Anderson.
Portis. That's what I thought. Mike Anderson, Clinton Portis, and Alfred Morris. There you go.
Crazy. I remember I was on my honeymoon in 2000, and Mike, and all of a sudden I grab USA Today and I see on the Monday after, you know, the first day after Monday night, I mean the Monday after this first Sunday of football, and I'm like, who's Mike Anderson? I'm like, why didn't I hear about this guy? So things that the information
that, let's see, you should have known because you were in fantasy football for at least 8 years by that point. Yes,
I should have known. I'll blame it on the fact
but that's why everybody right now wants to know anything about Niner running backs, because they don't have Saquon Barkley's your number one, right? It's like, we don't know who's their diehard, because it's not, they don't rely on one guy. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Frank Gore left town. So that we're approaching. So, I mean, it's been 8 years. It's crazy. So.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I know the fantasy community is hoping for that, hoping for a 1,000-yard rusher anytime we can find a bell cow running back, or as in Spanish, we like to call him the Elite Caballo.
The Elite Caballo, yes.
Yep.
Okay.
The offensive line was rated number 9 by PFF, and I'm a big believer in, you know, the offensive line and being a big believer that those are the guys that help pave the way. I mean, both in pass and the run game. This was number 9, the left tackle position. You mentioned Trent Williams. You know, he was Is this health permitting? Are we looking at another elite unit for this year?
A lot of people are saying so. I don't know yet. I think there's been a lot of issues. I think that was the number one issue I thought going into the offseason was fixing that line, especially the interior. Because I know Mike McGlinchey had a rough year last year, but I'm not worried about Mike. I think Mike's fine. Trent Williams is a godsend to have at left tackle as long as he's healthy. Bringing in Alex Mack to play center, I thought was exactly a super sharp move that they needed to do, because he knows exactly what he has to do in this offense. I think that's an excellent move. And then drafting Aaron Banks in the second round to play guard, I said that's high for a guard. But remember, this team drafted Josh Garnett in the first round, which was a really bad move. Aaron Banks looks like he's going to be a baller and play well. So the question is, do you stick him into that right guard spot, which is seemingly open, and just have Brunskill ready to float either on either side as a backup? Or do you pull Lakin Tomlinson out of left guard? I mean, I was wondering, I'm like, you don't usually use second round draft picks on guards that were all American left guards at Notre Dame and dump them over on the right side when maybe you go, well, he's a rookie. Let's put him in next to Trent Williams and Alex Mack. Any rookie deficiencies will be covered up by these vets. Lakin Tomlinson's making a lot of money for an offensive lineman, a guard. I think he's making $5 or $6 million, which he deserves. I mean, he's played really well. He didn't play super great last year, but he's a very upstanding guy, and I think they like him. But I could also see them saying, we're going to trade you, and we're going to put Banks in at left guard, and we're going to put, you know, Brunskill at right guard, and we have McKivitz and other guys we can plug in if things go awry. To me, that's the intrigue. That's the stuff that'll never steal headlines and attract people to websites, because they don't really care about the offensive line stuff like you and I were saying. So that's going to be really interesting to watch. But at this point, all we've seen is Aaron Banks at second string right guard. And that's to be expected, because I don't think that they would even make any switch maybe until the week of the regular season when they do it behind closed doors.
So one last one, you know, the defense was for fantasy players. It was one that people targeted like crazy in 2019 when this was one of the top units in all of football. And, you know, you got Nick Bosa returning, fingers crossed, because obviously they always say that first year coming out of the ACL surgery can be kind of tricky. And you also lost Robert Saleh as the defensive coordinator. Is this, you know, what does this unit have to do to kind of get back? And you, as you mentioned, there was a heavy investment in defensive backs, which sometimes they can sometimes take a little while to acclimate themselves.
I think there's no doubt what they need to do is to have Nick Bosa come back healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's so much reliant on that, because it's such a different defense when he's out there. Having Dee Ford would be a nice luxury, but you also have Samson Ebukam to cover for that. I think Eric Armstead could have a little bit more fire in his belly this year than last year, because, you know, he'd lost to Forrest Buckner and they were bringing up Kinlaw. So I think the defensive front should be improved, and it needs to be. You know, Fred Warner's played out of his mind the last couple of years and earned all pro. Going to earn a big contract extension in about a month and a half, I would imagine, if not sooner, probably come training camp. And then that all helps everybody in the back end. And, you know, I like Jimmy Ward's got a little spunk in him, you know, cause he's one of these guys, like we talked about, you being in the league this long, you can kind of, you know, speak your mind a little bit more and feel a little secure about yourself. And he's played really good football the last 2 years, and he stayed healthy the last 2 years, which was a big knock on him for all these years. So D'Amico Ryans is a big change without Robert Saleh. I think a lot of their defensive strategy will be similar. There might be some more blitzes, perhaps. He doesn't need a blitz, though, if Nick Bosa is causing havoc, right? So that's going to be dictated by the players, I think, more so than what D'Amico wants to do. It's just going to be who's going to replace Saleh's energy, I think. Who's going to fuel all those guys on defense? And that's kind of a good thing about Fred Warner. He has that in him, and he's worked that. He's ramped that up each of the last couple of years to be this vocal leader. You can't step in as a rookie necessarily and demand unless you're Patrick Willis. D'Amico Ryans did it as a rookie of the year with the Texans. But Fred's very authentic, and he's not just a hothead. He's a very cerebral, obviously extremely athletic linebacker, and I can see Fred taking on more of that energy. And maybe just you get some of these guys on the front side start bullying linemen. I mean, Kinlaw is a huge man, and if he starts throwing his weight around, and that benefits Armstead, and that benefit, and then you have Bosa and Ebukam blasting off the edge possibly with Ford, that could be a very strong defense once again.
All right, well, Cam, this is the last one. This has been great. Thank you so much for
my pleasure.
Our Familia community, and this is a fun one. I like to ask. And by the way, for this one, I'm gonna try and say your name like Sofia Vergara did in Modern Family. Cam. Yeah. so you're a Bay Area guy. And the Bay Area is known for great food. And I love to close out these kind of interviews with people's favorite tacos. It could be a favorite taco meat. If there's somewhere that you're hoping could give you a free lunch, if you want to give them a shout out, please feel free. I'm happy to put them on social media for you. But first off, favorite taco meats.
Okay. I was introduced to Al Pastor a few years ago. I liked it a lot. And it was, somebody told me about it when I was down in Monterey, Mi Pueblo, something like that, right? And I grew up enjoying the carne asadas, but one late night trip to Tio Alberto's in San Luis Obispo, and I was ordering lengua instead when I tried to speak Spanish very poorly at 2:30 in the morning. So I've had lengua too. That was okay. Appreciate that. Obviously, pollo asado is big. I've tried to be healthy and eat some white chicken breast meat. That's good.
Yes, muy bien.
But going back to my name, Los Camarones, I'm a big shrimp taco guy, and I will go shrimp tacos pretty much anywhere. The problem is we do not have great Mexican places in Pleasanton where I live. I mean, there's the closest one, they get my order wrong every time, so I'm not going to say their name. There's a spot downtown Pleasanton that's really good. And I will not ever promote a Chipotle taco because I just don't think it's, that qualifies. It's like saying, I go get my hamburgers at McDonald's. I appreciate the effort that it's there. There's a couple good places in the city that I like to go to. La Victoria in San Jose is very popular. I'm always in search of the best one though. So I'm always open for any tips. If anybody has a good tip, in the Bay Area, especially probably the South, you know, the South Bay and the Niners area, they have a couple spots, and but the hidden spot is in Alviso, and it's about a 5-minute drive from the facility, and it's called Maria Elena's, and it's in Alviso, and it's just they put in a Top Golf about a month ago there. That whole town, like I grew up in the Bay Area in the South Bay, and Alviso once was underwater, but Maria Elena's has been there for about 20 years, and that's a good little hidden gem. Out near the marshland.
Oh man. Well, we'll give them a shout out. Hopefully they have a Twitter account or a website. I'll find it.
Maybe
drop it in there. well, Cam, gracias. Camarón. I love the throwing in the camarón. I won't call you camarón.
please. You can. Hey, right, thanks for having me on. Yes.
Oh, this is awesome. Before we go off, where can people find you?
So on Instagram, I have my 49er channel is at 49ers.cam. So sometimes people do my personal one, but that's just like family pictures. So you don't need to see that. For a 49er perspective, go to 49ers.cam, C-A-M. And then on Twitter, I'm at Cam Inman, and C-A-M-I-N-M-A-N. And there you go. And just, you know, mercurynews.com, eastbaytimes.com. Those are our two papers that are that we do in the news in the Bay Area that I'm on. I do radio with 95.7 The Game FM up here. I'm our 49ers insider for that. And I do a lot of stuff with Channel 5 CBS affiliate during the season too. So thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And by the way, Gilbert also said Al Pastor Tacos. So, you know, great minds think alike. So everybody, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure our independent podcast gets out to the Familia community. Also, thank you to YouTube for putting us out there on TV, at least on computer screens. And so make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube, and find our original content at familiaffb.com, including I'm going to do a wrap up on the 49ers after this interview. I'm at Jorge Martin 17 on Twitter. You can find our Twitter and Instagram at familiaffb, as well as our familiaffb Facebook page. Otra vez, Cam, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And everybody remember, todos somos familia.
Gracias, Jorge.